Welcome back to the Patriot Leadership Podcast. My name is Lonnie Buckner. We appreciate you listening. If you would, if you've been liking the show, click subscribe, hit that like button, maybe even share it with a friend or somebody you think might be interested. Also, we have our website up and running, which is patriotleadershipadvisors.com. Go over there and check out our content. You can see the different services and things that we offer in the space of leadership training, advising, coaching, and business assessments. Today, we're happy to have Mac Story on the show. Mac is the owner of Blue Collar Leaders. He's written several books about leadership, so is his wife, and they travel around and they do leadership training, coaching, mentoring, things like that. I think you'll like what Mac has to say today, and he was nice enough to come on the show and share their story and some of their successes with us. You can also check out their podcast. And we'll provide some of those details in the show notes later on. But today we'll go ahead and get started. Hopefully you like this interview, and thanks for listening in. All right, today we have Mac Story on from the bluecollarleaders.com, and he's written a bunch of books on blue collar leadership. Mac, thanks so much for joining me. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks, Lonnie, man. It's a privilege to be on here and support what you're doing, man. We need a lot more people out here trying to make a impact on this world that we're living in.
I agree. And, I was doing some research on other podcasts that were out there, which is how I came across you and your company. And I listened to a couple episodes, and I really liked what you guys were doing, and reached out, and you've been nice enough to give me a lot of your time, just helping me out, and agreed to come on and do the show. So again, I really appreciate your generosity and kindness, and wanted to be able to share your story with the listeners.
Good stuff, man. Always happy to support a devil dog too. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's a small fraternity. Yeah.
Yeah, man, I got to tell you listeners one thing before you get started asking me questions. I always do this when I speak, whenever I do anything, pretty much, especially with new groups. I have to let everybody know right off the bat that I'm bilingual, and we speak all over the country. Last year, we were in 40 states, so a lot of people think when I say that, they think that I'm trying to impress them and let them know that I speak Spanish, but that's actually not it. I am bilingual, but my second language is country, and I'm very gifted at it. I tell people sometimes, they don't know what I'm saying. They have to raise their hand, and I speak with my wife, Rhea, most of the time, and every now and then she has to try to do a little bit of interpreting. So your audience, I have to forgive me. It's the best I can do, man.
Well, apparently it's not bothering too many people because it sounds like you guys are staying pretty busy.
Yeah, it's working for me. I ain't changing it, but I do have to warn people.
Well, good deal. I appreciate that. And why don't you just tell us a little bit about you and your wife and what Blue Collar Leadership's all about?
Yeah, my background's actually manufacturing. The first 10 years of my career pretty much spent on the front lines from 1988 to 2000, or 1988 to 1998, and basically operating CNC lathes, mills, drills, all that sort of stuff. And I was joking with you about the devil dog thing, and I was in a Marine Reserve infantry unit back in those days from 87 to 91. So I was doing that, you know, a little bit part-time, you want to call it that, I guess, and started climbing my way up. Around 1995, I started going to community college and started getting promotions and things like that, and started working my way up and became a CNC programmer, a draftsman. I was doing all kind of drawings for tooling chuck setup sheets, parts, and all kind of things like that, and programming the lathes and mills and drills. Then I kind of moved up through engineering roles, although I didn't have an engineering degree. I eventually got a business degree, but I had a lot of experience doing a lot of those things. So I ended up being in cost estimation engineering, process engineering, and ended up 2008. I finally resigned as the lean manager and quality manager for a plant, a pretty large company, a couple of $1 billion company with 70 plants around the world. And I was supporting other plants in the United States and Mexico with process improvement, lean manufacturing. So I had started my own lean manufacturing business in 2008, consulting. And that was the same year I discovered leadership. I was introduced actually to it through a 1-hour audio of the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And I just had a 1-hour audio highlight. I didn't know there was anything like that existed. No company had ever invested a single penny or a single minute teaching me anything like that in my 20-year manufacturing career. So it got my attention. I've been reading every day since. And 4 years after that, And 4 years after reading every day, I basically let all my consulting clients, you know, expire, my contracts expire. And I just rebuilt myself into a leadership development speaker, author, and trainer. And today, I've got 13 books, and my wife and I, she's got 13 books as well. And then she's got some journals. So we got 31 publications together. But after a year of me doing this, I was so broke, man. She quit her job, wanted to be broke with me. And so now we do this together, and we're all over the place. But what blue collar leadership is, basically, when I discovered all these principles, I quickly figured out that the stuff that I was learning is not something that's commonly taught in blue collar industries, especially frontline entry level people, and basically frontline supervision, middle management, and a lot of times upper management don't seem to get it, especially in, you know, privately owned companies where the business owner is the one running the show at the top. A lot of times they've never even had this stuff. So
I've ran into this.
Yeah, it's common, man. And so I took a lot of what I tell people, I discovered a bunch of principles. For, this is just me speaking. A lot of other people, they've heard this stuff and been taught it their whole life, but I hadn't. It was all new to me. And so basically I figured out that all these principles that were being taught to white collar executives, you know, companies spending thousands of dollars sending these white collar executives to all this training and development, they were getting taught all this kind of stuff to help them achieve and excel and thrive in life. And once I discovered all this and realized that no one was really putting it in my space, especially someone like me from my world, I decided I'm going to take all these principles that I'm learning, wrap my blue collar stories and my blue collar experience around it, and create something unique for the blue collar workforce and those who lead them.
Well, I think that's great. That's honestly seems like a pretty smart strategy. And going back to the book or video series that you stumbled on, the Habits of the Highly Effective Leaders, and what kind of led you to even looking into that? Did you see yourself as a leader and you were just trying to get better, or were you really just curious about something new?
No, man, it's a pretty neat story in itself. And I write about it in depth in my first book I wrote called Defining Influence, Increasing Your Influence Increases Your Options. And I wrote about it in there for anybody who's listening that may want to hear a deeper version of kind of what we're going to talk about here. But basically it was, you know, I told you I heard that in 2008, I think, but I was given that 1 hour audio in 2005, a friend of mine, actually, I was a manager, upper level manager and a frontline entry level quality technician, actually took my iPod at the time in 2005, put some music on it for me. And he, I guess he was at his friend's house or something, wherever he putting the music on that. And he said, "Hey man, I put a business book on there for you." I said, wow. I said, "Okay, what is it?" He said, "It's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People." I said, "Is it any good?" He said, "I don't know. I ain't ever listened to it." And I don't know if his name is Zach. I don't know if Zach ever listened to it, and I didn't listen to it for 3 years. But what happened was, you know, I just started listening to my music. 3 years later, 2008, I resigned from 20 years in my corporate career and started my lean consulting business. And I'm cruising around, man, had my music jamming out. At the time I had a Corvette Z06 with long tube headers. The thing sounded like a NASCAR, and I had a sound system in there. You don't care about all that stuff anymore, but then I did. So I had all that stuff, listening to my music is blasting, and all of a sudden a dude started talking. I'm like, "What in the world is this?" I looked at my stereo because I had it plugged in, so it was scrolling across the screen. It said 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So, you know, this was 3 years later, and it just hit me. I was like, That's that business book Zach gave me. I'm starting my own business. Maybe I should listen to it. And so I just let it play. And within 3 or 4 minutes. And also, just for your listeners, if you're not familiar with that, if you listen to that entire book on audio, it's probably about 12, 13 hours. But I didn't even know there was a book. I didn't know there was an industry. I didn't know nothing. All I knew is I was starting to hear this stuff that made a lot of sense. So,
it was interrupting your music in your Corvette, right?
that's really how it come to be, but it made so much sense so fast that I listened to it. And within 3 or 4 minutes, I speak all the time, all over the place, conferences and on-site leadership development and things like that. But pretty much no matter where I'm speaking, I always tell people, because I want them to know, because it may be the same thing for them that it was for me, but I tell them within a few minutes I heard something. And it's the greatest principle I've ever learned in my life. And I needed to learn it. And basically pretty quick, within the first few minutes, Dr. Covey started talking about being proactive, Stephen R. Covey, the author. And he said, between stimulus and response, human beings have the freedom to choose their response. I mean, it sounds so simple now. It sounds so common sense now. But at the time, I ain't never heard anything like that. I hadn't thought about it, definitely, because something happened in my life, especially if it had to do with me getting angry. I get angry in about, you know, a tenth of a second. I mean, whatever was making me angry wasn't even over yet, and I'd be angry. That's how fast that I would get angry. And I had a bad, bad temper. I always tell people, when me and Rhea are speaking, she'll say, I don't think they understand painting a picture. I say, can you imagine a crazy little chihuahua on acid with a machine gun, knows how to use it? That's how crazy I'd get in a split second. But when he said that between stimulus and response, people have the freedom to pause and choose their response. And I was like, this joker doesn't know Mac's story. And I hit rewind, man. And literally, I mean, I see it in my mind today and hear it. I just played it over and over, just that part, because it's like, I ain't never thought about I could choose my response. You know, my family always said short temper runs in the family, and we provide the evidence to support the belief.
Yeah, you felt like you just had to be that way, right?
I thought that, yeah, I thought that's just the way I am. And, you know, then I finally let it play, and he says, you know, people are response able, which means they're responsible. And we have the freedom. If we have the freedom to choose our response, we can choose not to be angry. And I mean, that I've been reading or listening to audios or watching videos every day since then. No, that's 12 years ago. And I always tell people, I hate to read, but I love to learn more than I hate to read, especially about this stuff. So I got a lot under my belt these days. And that's still my number one book, though, is The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It'll make your head hurt when you read the book. Yeah,
it's fascinating that, you know, you didn't have a background in any of these things. You didn't have, you know, again, you weren't in a company where they were sending you to training or whatever. And then a buddy just throws it on your iPod and you kind of stumble upon it. I think that's fascinating.
Yep. I mean, that's exactly how it started, man. But I tell people, some people ask me sometimes, you know, what's different about you? What made you actually, because I've transformed my life, not just my anger problem, all kind of things. I've transformed my life personally and professionally. And sometimes, you know, when I'm speaking and some people say, what caused you to actually take this stuff and do something with it? Mm-hmm. You know, you've been coming to our company a few times. Some people maybe get on board, but most people don't. Why do some people get on board and some don't, you know, like you? I said, first of all, they got to believe what I'm saying, the principle. But the most important thing is they got to believe if I go apply this, I'm actually going to get the result that I'm being told I'll get. If you don't believe this stuff will work, you ain't never going to try it and you ain't never going to get the result. This is that simple.
No, you're absolutely right. And going into, you know, so once you kind of move forward and you said, man, I'm really into this leadership thing. It's helping me change my life and I want to be able to help others. So you started writing books and putting materials together. What's some of the kind of core philosophies or things that your leadership style is teaching others?
Yeah, I mean, everything that I teach, people call it, you know, people who are in the industry, a lot of people call it servant leadership. I call it high impact leadership, because if you're familiar with this, people talk about management versus leadership, and nothing against management, but you should manage things and processes. You have to, because they don't think and feel, but you should lead people because they do. But the thing is, you don't have to lead people. You can also manage people just like objects, just like there are more things and processes. So when I talk about high impact leadership, the reason I use that term is because then I can also use low impact leadership. And when I'm using the term low impact leadership, what I'm really talking about are managers of people. Again, management's not a bad thing. We need to be highly effective managers relative to things and processes, not people. It's a completely different skill set. But all I need to be a manager of someone is someone give me a position, rank, title, and now I've got control and I've got authority, and I don't have to have a highly developed character to be a manager of people. All I have to do is someone give me the position and title and the rank. But what I teach people is to move beyond formal authority and how to lead with moral authority. And the difference is people follow moral authority leaders because they have to. People follow, oh, did I say formal authority? I can't remember.
If people you said follow, moral the first time.
Yeah, I said it backwards just now. People follow formal authority leaders because they have to, but people follow moral authority leaders because they want to. And
absolutely.
And, you know, I've read books and I've heard people speak, and I can validate it with my own life. I don't need researchers. I don't get into a bunch of stats and all that stuff, but I read them. I read it. And I think it's greater than this, but I've heard and read where research studies show that, you know, people following someone because they want to versus following someone because they have to, the ones who follow because they want to are 40% more productive. And I've validated in my own leadership and I've seen it. Where I've had real numbers and metrics where I think that number's far greater than 40%. But that's what
I was going to agree with that or say the same thing, because, you know, I mean, think about just any employee. It could be you or me or anybody. And in a business, if you're really happy with your supervision, you like your boss, you like the management folks inside the company, and you're really happy with what you're doing, you're probably going to come into work every day motivated and wanting to do a good job versus, you know, the people that feel like they're mistreated or the leadership is abusive or they're not honest with them and all those things that we don't like. People then just kind of do enough to get by usually, don't they?
Yep. And, you know, I teach a point on that because I try to hit it from both ends. You know, I try to teach, grow and develop the frontline entry-level workforce. But also, I can do it from the other end, too. I can start at the top of the org chart and work with the president, the CEO, the business owner, and work down. Typically, in most companies, my best clients, I work with everybody, every single person in the company. A lot of times, they're in the room all at the same time. Sometimes, maybe a couple hundred of them, from the guy who owns the company to the frontline workforce and everybody in between and the support roles. But one thing that's unique about my content, especially my book, Blue Collar Leadership, Leading from the Front Lines, that book is written specifically for an entry-level worker. You know, the person down there making it happen. When the front line's responsible for the bottom line is what I always say. And that's what I help leaders do. I help leaders engage the front line to improve the bottom line. But it doesn't mean that I just focus on the front line, because usually to do that, I've got to focus on up in the org chart. You know, I got to help develop the leaders. So, but there's a principle that I teach in that book, and I teach it fairly early on, because I see anybody is a leader. Every person on this planet is a leader to me, and I grow and develop leaders at every level. So one thing I want that entry level person to know fairly quick, I teach them they're not working for whatever company they work at. You know, that's where they work, but that's not who they're working for. I teach them in that book to see that they're working for themselves. If they're getting paid, they're working for themselves so that they can support themselves and their family. They're working, you know, with other people at some location, but they're not working for that company. They're working for themselves. And the reason I want them to know that is because it changes their mindset. If I think I'm working for you, Lonnie, and I don't like you, I may not do a good job. And everybody around is watching me. Other bosses are watching me. Coworkers are watching me. But if I don't like you and I walk in and I know I'm working for me, the job that I do matters. I'm going to do a better job if I know I'm working for me than if I think I'm working for somebody that I don't like. And if I think so if I understand that principle, I'm working for me. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to generate positive word of mouth for my business, which is me. So I can grow my brand, which is me. And I want to be positive in that way. So I quickly get the frontline entry-level worker to realize they're working for themselves. If they don't do a good job, they ain't hurting nobody. I mean, the person they're hurting the most is themselves. Because
sure, they're undermining their own, value in the company.
Absolutely. I mean, they may want to work for another boss that they actually like, but that boss sees them doing a poor job working for a boss they don't like. So why would that boss ever want them to come work on their team? They wouldn't.
Sure.
But they don't understand a lot of the dynamics going on. So I teach that. And I would like to back up 1 second and say, you know, after I started learning this stuff in 2008, that's when I started my own consulting business. And basically from 08 to 2012, I probably logged, it ain't probably, I know I've added it up, it's more than 11,000 hours leading process improvement teams, where I show up on Monday and have to lead a team of people I don't know. A lot of times they don't know each other and had never been on a team like this. It's called Lean Manufacturing, Kaizen. And yep. I logged over 11,000 hours leading teams like that from basically 2008 to 2012. And that's where I was able to really hone all this stuff that I was learning. I started teaching it to the people because I got to run the show. So I started introducing it to all these teams. So I was teaching them what I was learning, which actually allowed me to be even more effective because I get their mindset right off the bat on Monday. I give them 4 hours of personal growth and development type stuff. And so that allowed me to learn it really well, but it also forced me to model it at a high level because I was teaching people how I ought to be. So, so that's where I kind of fine tuned all the lessons that I share in all my books, the principles. I may have learned the principle from a book and learned how to articulate it, but I learned how to live it and apply it by living it and applying it literally.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you go into that consulting gig because, you know, you had been the, you know, kind of lean expert in manufacturing where you were at previously as an employee. And then you start, you know, consulting with other companies to help them improve their manufacturing. And then, boom, it sounds like you start to see this other problem kind of at the same time that you're introduced to leadership yourself.
Exactly.
So kind of a pretty neat story how that kind of all formed together and got you to where you are now.
You're exactly right. I mean, I knew it was a problem, but I didn't know what was causing it. I didn't know there was a treatment, so to speak, for it.
No, but it's pretty awesome that you took the time to educate yourself and then come up with some materials and stuff to help educate others. And obviously, that's working. With your different travels and the companies you've worked with, can you share some of the top one or two leadership kind of pitfalls or maybe characteristics that you see in people that cause some of the issues that they have with inside organizations that either, you know, ruins the culture or the morale and those sorts of things?
Yeah. The number one, I mean, we've had clients, we've had some, you know, some big clients, we've had multi-billion dollar global companies, you know, Bayer, we've US military. We've done a lot of stuff with the Navy, done some stuff with Air Force. Chick-fil-A was a client of ours for 3 years. And I always tell people we were not at Chick-fil-A because we were great. We were at Chick-fil-A because they were great and they always want to get better. I mean, we just a tiny piece of the puzzle. They've been doing that. What you and I are talking about, when people go to Chick-fil-A, what they see at Chick-fil-A is 50 plus years of what me and you are talking about. True, Kathy started it from the beginning.
They have a good model.
They do have a good model and it's character. I mean, it's another thing people need to know when whenever I say leadership, one thing is it means influence. The other thing is character development in my world equals leadership development. And personal growth is a foundation for leadership development. So when you're asking me what's the biggest pitfalls, the number one pitfall is always that the leaders think it's the people that are the problem. And I always tell people if the people, because see, you can go look up research for, I don't know how far back you want to go. You can go Google up engagement. You're going to find out that about 70 to 80% of people say they're disengaged or heavily disengaged at work, but they're always asking the people, you know, it's like the workforce they're asking. They're always right. Measuring the workforce that's disengaged. And I got a book called Blue Collar Leadership and Culture, the five components for building high performance teams. And one of the things I talk about in there is disengagement below is a symptom of the root cause, which is disengagement above. And what I mean by that is I don't mean they're disengaged as managers. They may be heavily engaged as managers. They're disengaged as leaders. They don't understand that they even need to grow and develop as leaders, and they don't have to. They can become millionaires and billionaires managing people. It's a choice to become a leader. A lot of times people say, you know, are leaders born or made? I say neither. It's a choice. It's a choice to develop the kind of character that will allow you to become a leader worth following, that people want to follow. So that's the number one thing that I see is a lot of times the top leaders don't want to get involved as much as they want the folks on the, you know, further down the org chart to get in. I always tell people I tell these leaders, if I get opportunity to really talk with them a lot, the org chart is nothing more than a list of managers. That's what the org chart is. It's not a list of leaders, you know, high impact leaders. They may or may not be high impact leaders. They're absolutely managers of things and processes. And most often they're also managers of people. But what I tell them is if there's 1,000 people in your organization, there's 1,000 leaders in your organization. And each one of those individuals, depending on how much they want to grow and develop themselves, they get to decide where they're at on a scale of 1 to 10. There is no zero because everybody has influence. They're either a positive one or a negative one. And by negative, I mean, you know, negative influence, because there are negative leaders too. So you can be on the negative scale of influence or the positive scale.
When inside of some of these places where you've got people that are, you know, more senior on the organizational chart, is some of the lack of engagement from folks like that, is there a common theme there? Is it sometimes maybe they don't understand the impact that they have when they're not engaged with people, or maybe they just don't see the value in people? Is there anything that kind of jumps out to you with that?
It's all of those and a lot more, literally. I mean, the reasons why are vast, you know, why they don't get engaged. I mean, it takes a really high character person at the top to truly want to do the kind of stuff that I do for companies. And I do stuff for companies with 20 people, or do stuff for companies with, you know, tens of thousands of people. I do all across the board. But the thing is, I'll give you an example, and I'm not speaking about any company specifically, because there's, you know, a lot of people fall in this category. But sometimes when we come in and we always try to get the leader to get everybody, especially the very first time, get everybody in the room, let us just talk to them, let us connect with them, let them feel who we are, and then we do it together. That way everybody realizes it doesn't matter what position title we got, we've all got to grow, and we got to grow together. That's, you know, that's what I want to paint that picture on the front end. I want to try to create that and make that happen if I can. And a lot of times, I mean, I can do that. And so everybody comes in. There's two kind of leaders that if the top leader will come in a room, there's usually two different kind of leaders. There's going to be one. And I teach this from the stage. I teach it when it's actually happening in the room. And I do it in a nice way, maybe nicer than it's going to sound when I tell you the story right here. but here I'm trying to, you know, get it done kind of quick. But Basically I usually tell a story about other leaders. You know, I tell this story. I ain't talking about the people in the room. That's one way that I make it nice. I ain't talking about you. I'm telling you a story about something else, somewhere else. And I say, you know, there's two kind of leaders when this happens. I say there's top leaders who come in, sit on the front row, and they take more notes than anybody. And they want everybody else to see what they're doing and see that this means just as much to them, and that they need to grow just as much as anybody else. And then they set up there in the front so you can see what they're doing. I said, then there's another kind of leader who comes in the room and stands in the back so they can watch and see what you're doing. And you don't even know they're in the room. And most of the time they don't stay in the room. And a lot of times they definitely don't take notes. They stand back with their arms crossed and, you know, try to see what everybody else is up to. And I asked them, if you didn't know anything else but that about two leaders, everything else was identical that you knew. You could work for one of those leaders, or you could work with one of those leaders. Which one would it be? Which one, if you had to choose one to follow, would you want one that was sitting on the front row taking notes, engaged at a high level, modeling, wanting to grow and learn? Or would you want to go work with the one in the back who thinks they know it all? I mean, it's obvious. It's common sense answer.
Yeah, I'm sure you get the same one every time.
Absolutely. But the reason I ask that question like that is I want people to know. And I teach this in that Blue Collar Leadership book for the front lines. Chapter 4 is common sense is never enough. Because I usually ask that kind of question, and I'll say, that answer was common sense, right? Everybody knew the answer to that question. They want to work for the gate leader who's engaged to become a better leader, not the one that thinks he's better than everybody else. I say, that's common sense. I say, but often doing what is commonly understood requires uncommon sense. We use the word wrong, the term. We say common sense, we think that means anybody should do it. That's, you know, that's common sense. Why'd he do that? Or that's common sense. Why didn't he do that? But what we're really saying is when we use the term common sense, we mean anyone should understand that they should do it. Doing a bunch of things in life requires uncommon sense. Because I'll ask the people in the room, again, they're all different levels. I say, it's easy to look out the window at the leader, but what happens when you look in the mirror at that leader? Which one are you?
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I had, along this same line that you're going on, when you first go into companies like this and whoever that decision maker or group of decision makers was that wanted you to come in and teach leadership, when you have those conversations initially before you go in and talk to the, you know, the bulk of the company, yep. Do you kind of coach them along about, hey, you know, it's important for you guys to be up front and engaged, or you just kind of wait to see how they naturally react to it?
No, I tell them because I want them to know. I mean, I want to get good results. I always tell them when I'm on the team, I'm on the team. I ain't sitting on the bench. I may only be here every now and then, but when I walk through that door, this is my team too. And I care about the results. And if you want me to be in the room, I want you to get good results. And I always tell them, and I say it, and again, I'm kind of accelerating things for you on your show here. So it ain't always as rough and brash as it may sound when I'm saying it right here. Because if I did the way it might sound on here, I might not have any business. But what I tell people is, in a short, condensed way for you, I tell them, you hired me. And some of this I say literally, but I've built up to be able to say this. I don't walk in the door and say this the first minute that I'm talking to somebody, by no means.
Sure.
But I say, you're hiring me to come grow and develop the people. I've got a track record of that. I've been doing it. I ain't ever had a bad lean event. Anybody who is interested in this content, we're going to grow your people. That's what we do. And I'm telling you, it's not because Mac Story is special. I'm just a regular old dude that applies this stuff. I'm about as regular as you can get. I said, but what is special are all these principles. All I have to do is live these principles, be authentic, be transparent. The rest of it will take care of itself. You hiring us to grow, to develop these people, it's going to happen. I said, but there's something that you got to do. I say it's my job to grow them, but it's your job to keep them. And I said, you got to understand what that means. What that means is you've got to get engaged too. Because if you just bring me in to grow and develop your people, and I actually do that, and you don't grow, they're going to outgrow you. And those who are the Absolutely. Most, those who are the hungriest, who grow the fastest, maybe you bring me in once a month, but there's somebody who's like Mac Story. All they need is a spark, and they're reading every day. After they hear us, they get introduced. They go out and start reading their own stuff. Those people are the ones that can truly transform your organization, and they'll do it if you will let them. But you've got to be on board or they're going to outgrow you. They're going to see what they're learning. Then they're going to look at you and say, you're not even engaged. You don't even value this stuff. And they're going to be the first ones out the door. And I don't want them to be the first ones out the door. I want them to stay so we can transform the organization.
No, absolutely. And it's funny. You and I have talked about this one other time, but one of your podcasts, I think it might have been 125 or so, but you were talking about just that truth, leadership truth or whatever. And it was that point of, you know, if you're following a bad leader, that's, you know, shame on you too about being a bad follower. Don't follow somebody off a cliff, you know, be smart about this. And if you don't think that the leadership's gonna take it as serious when you're in there doing the training and you end up growing past them, then unfortunately they probably will lose some of those folks. But I guess that's sort of the natural progression and can't control that part.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of people have heard what I'm about to say, but I'm blown away by how many people hadn't heard this little saying right here. So I always say it anyway, because I know a lot of people hadn't heard it. But a lot of times when I go in these organizations, you can tell the managers of people, they don't really like what I'm selling. They don't like, you know, release the people and empower the people and engage the people. They don't like that because that takes all the control away from those people. And that's how they survive, is through control. So one of the things they'll say literally a lot of times, and you probably heard it, Lonnie, but some of your people listening may not have heard it. But the one thing they'll say is, when I start talking about that kind of stuff, especially, and one reason I say that is kind of to try to get them to say this, they'll say, well, what happens if we train all these people and they leave? And I say, what everybody knows is, I said, there's something worse than that. I said, you think it's bad if you train these people and they leave? And they're like, yeah, that's bad. I said, there's something worse than that. And they kind of look at me. I say, what happens if you don't train them and they stay?
Right.
That's far worse than training them and they leave. But see, they're already trying to justify and make excuses. And they're trying to, there's something that happens, Lonnie, whether it was lean manufacturing, process improvement, or leadership development, there's something that happens when I get to go into a company, or anybody else goes into a company that really knows how to do this and transform a culture. And I tell the leaders this up front too. I said, as soon as we start down this path, there's going to be a divide. The people it's going to divide. I mean, there's going to be people who are for it, people who are against it. And the ones who are against it are going to be the loudest.
And yeah, you see this when companies make, you know, even like senior leadership changes, you know, some people like it, some people don't. And there's usually a group, at least a certain percentage, that'll jump ship.
Yep. And there's a reason. A lot of people don't really understand the reason. Because you know, I teach this stuff from the stage too. I teach people all the stuff that I'm telling you because I want them to know it. I want them to be aware of it. It actually accelerates the journey. I want people to know in the room too that you're either on one team or the other, and I know it. I know you're on one of the two teams. And I say, and when you go out at break and you go out at lunch and you're bad-mouthing today's session, everybody else is going to know it too. And eventually your leaders are going to know it. And if you're bad-mouthing something the leader truly values, do you think your influence is going up or down inside this organization? And, you know, there's a lot of lessons that go with it. But I like to teach them that. I like for them to know about these divides because it's going to happen. And as soon as a leader says, hey, we're going to become this. This is who we are. We're going to align ourselves behind this common set of shared principles. What causes that divide is this right here. It's the same thing. I don't want to talk about politics. I don't get into all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's the same principle at play. You can see it very easily in politics. But anything, when this happens, like I'll tell the people when I'm speaking, I'll say, I come in here and I talk to you. Some of you, I look out there and I see your eyes and I see your face. You nod and you fired up. Some of you have been waiting forever for this to happen in your company and you're excited about it. And then there's other folks out there. I can kind of see you too. You kind of rolling your eyes. You may have your arms crossed. You might have said something while ago at break that wasn't so positive about this session, you know, that sort of thing. And you're out there too. Or you may just be totally silent, but that's what you're thinking and you're feeling. Like you may be thinking you didn't volunteer to come in here. You were voluntold. And if it was up to you, you wouldn't be in here. And I tell them, if you're in this room and you don't want to be in here and it was up to me, I promise you Max Story will let you go right now because I didn't come to talk to you. I literally tell them that because it's the truth. But what I was just going to say what I want them to know, though. I say, why is it like that? And I teach them, see, leadership is influence. And I mean authentic influence, not artificial, which is job title and that sort of stuff. But authentic influence is based on character and morals and, you know, all that kind of stuff. The foundation of authentic influence is trust. But then I teach about what is the foundation of trust, and it's our intention. And this is where I'm teaching them that little lesson about why is there a divide. And I said, this is how it works. When it comes to intention, the two components of that is either motivation or manipulation. I say, so what's happening is if somebody voluntold you to come in here, you didn't want to come. Now that you're in here, you really don't want to be in here because you don't value this. I say, how do you feel when I'm talking? You feel motivated or manipulated? You know, everybody knows the answer. I talk common sense stuff. Everybody always knows the answer. I call them dumb questions. I say, y'all wonder why I keep asking all these dumb questions. It's because most people hadn't thought about it. I say, so if somebody made you come in here, you don't like this, you feel manipulated. If somebody told you to come in here and maybe you didn't want to come, but now you're in here and you like what you're hearing, you're glad that you're here, or maybe you heard about it and you volunteered to come, you're hearing the same exact thing, yet you feel motivated. So manipulation is meaning benefit for me, but no benefit for you. Motivation is mutual benefit.
So, absolutely. And I think that's interesting. That's one of the reasons I liked your content initially was it's that honesty. And it was kind of maybe kind of like a Marine Corps thing for me too, where it was sort of that in your face, not in a mean way, but just, it's just truth. And you've got a whole section on this, but in a lot of places, I think, especially in a kind of a corporate feel, people would just ignore that and step around that to avoid any sort of uncomfortable conversation. Yep. But that's really right there, the conversation that needs to take place. And you still do it in a professional way, but it still has to happen.
Absolutely. I mean, and people, you know, it sounds like, you know, when I'm talking to you, I got a lot of energy, man. I get fired up. I had to stand up even, you know, when I'm talking to you. But I want people to know all this stuff's based on principles. And I want them to know, what is the difference? You know, why is 50% of the country like this politician, 50% like the other one? And it comes down to the lesson I just taught. It's about values. I didn't really get into that piece just a second ago, but that is the foundation. Why do some people feel motivated? Some feel manipulated. It's values. The people who like what I'm saying in the room, we could have shared values on some level. So they feel motivated. It's mutual benefit. Mm-hmm. The ones who don't like what I'm saying, we don't have shared values, definitely on what I'm talking about. So they feel manipulated. Their boss is trying to manipulate them to buy into something they don't want, or they think I'm trying to do it, or they think both of us are trying to do it. and what they have to understand. And I tell them when I walk into a room like that, if I'm there, you know, most of the time we go, the first time we're there like 2 hours, and Lonnie, I could talk about this 8 hours a day for the rest of my life, and everybody, every day would be different. That's how much stuff there is for people to learn. But one of the things, oh, I lost my thought. What was I about to say?
You just finished up with, you know, motivation and manipulation, and
I'd have to go. I mean, it comes out subconscious. I don't know where
that's
I was.
All right.
It's so much to talk about.
Well, I was gonna ask you kind of one last thing to before we get wrapped up here was, and if you think about it, feel free to go back. But,
okay.
You know, for anybody listening that, you know, either is a business owner or a manager or wants to be a manager, and they know that feeling inside of the place that they work where they're not getting the results out of people that they hoped for, or people have, you know, poor attitudes and things like that. If you could just give them kind of one tip to get started down a leadership journey to help improve that kind of stuff, what would be one simple thing they could do to get started?
For an individual or for the leader who's trying to get individuals to get engaged?
Just that individual that wants to make some improvements.
Yeah, for an individual, and again, I guess it really the answer is going to be the same, no matter who it is. I mean, it's really to look in the mirror and get to work on yourself and realize whatever you think's holding you back ain't holding you back. There's only one thing holding you back. It's you. It feels good. I always tell people, I think it's Henry Cloud that says, blame is comfort food for the soul. But I mean, and it is. But there's only one reason people blame other people. And that's because there's only one other choice is accept responsibility.
And well, that's hard, isn't it?
It is hard. See, when I blame you, if I truly believe that you're why I can't achieve whatever it is I want to achieve or accomplish, whether it's a pay raise or a promotion or whatever it is in life I want, a lot of people don't perform well because they're frustrated. But they're frustrated because of their own choices. But that ain't, they don't understand that because they're looking out the window. They got to blame somebody. See, if I blame you and I really believe it's you, and I talk to my friend and he thinks it's you too, especially that, now I got some backup. Both of us think it's your fault. If we think it's your fault, but most especially if I think it's your fault, you've got to do everything to fix it. I have to do nothing, no thing. But the moment that I look in the mirror and say, I'm going to be a high impact individual, I'm going to take responsibility for me. It's my fault. I'm responsible. Well, I went from having to do no thing to now I got to do everything. And people don't want to do everything. They want to blame somebody else and get someone else to do it. So that's, you know, that's one of the core traits that I teach in all of my books, no matter whether it's frontline, entry-level people, support folks, top leader, is I'm responsible. That's what being a high-impact leader in my world means. I'm responsible. It doesn't matter what it is. I'm going to look in the mirror and say I'm responsible. Because if I'm the leader, I am. And if I think I'm not responsible, somebody else is the leader.
No, I think that's a great point. And I think I talked about that maybe in the very first podcast. I probably sounded terrible and rambled through, but
good stuff.
For me, you know, like, I don't know, 8-10 years, maybe, I don't know, into my Marine Corps career, I kind of had to do the same thing and look at myself and go, man, I'm really just a jerk that people don't like. I mean, being mean to people and to try to get them to do what you want, to manipulate, as you were saying earlier, isn't the way. It's if you can achieve what you talked about early on, you know, getting people to do the things that you're trying to accomplish because they really want to, because they want to work with you, is the way to get great results out of a team. And I think those are really good points. I wanted to, before we finish up here, for all of our listeners, they want to be able to find Blue Collar Leadership and your books and the podcast. Why don't you just tell them real quick, what's the best way to be able to engage with you and hear some of your content?
Yep. My website is bluecollarleadership.com. And actually, if you type in bluecollarleadership.com/download, DOWNLOAD, you actually can read the first 5 chapters of all 5 of my Blue Collar Leadership books. And I've got a Blue Collar Leadership podcast. It's available on most podcast platforms. I've got a bunch of YouTube videos. I got tons of stuff. LinkedIn is my preferred social media platform. I copy a lot of stuff I post on LinkedIn. I paste it on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I spread it around everywhere, but LinkedIn, I got about 50,000 followers on LinkedIn. I've got a couple hundred articles on LinkedIn and, you know, I put out tons and tons of free content through the videos, the podcast, and my articles. And But if they want to buy the books and really dive in, all five of my blue collar leadership books are written for people like me that don't like to read. A lot of those in the blue collar space. So they're 30 chapters, 3 pages each. You can read a chapter in 6 or 7 minutes. But I'm telling you, man, these things are packed full of gold that I've been mining all these years, and they're powerful little books. I have people tell me all the time, I like to highlight and mark up books, and they'll say, I started doing that with your book and I had to just quit because I was marking up the whole book. That's because I feel it.
We've cut out all the fluff. You got all the good stuff in there. Yeah.
Yep.
That's great. I can tell you, I've listened to the podcast. I've checked out your website, and I follow you on LinkedIn, and you put out a ton of content on there that's good every day too. So
Lonnie, I got to say one thing, man.
Yeah, please.
I know you're probably about to cut this thing off, but I want to say one of the most important things that happened to me because of all of this. In 2008, when I hit play on that audio, or it just come on automatic, and I let it play. My son was 17, only got one child. He's 29 now, but he was 17 then. He had hated me and didn't have a relationship with me for the past 2 years at that time. When he was 15, he quit talking to me, went and stayed with his mother. I've been married to Rhea 20 years almost. Next year will be 20 years. We've been together 20 years already. But he hadn't talked to me since he was 15. I discovered this stuff when he was 17. I dove in head first every day. Like I said, ever since then. So 2 years of me being in every day, reading, growing, learning, applying it, trying to live it. It took me 2 years before he gave me another chance. And my mom had been telling him, your dad's changing, your dad's changing. So it was 4 years that he had hated me and hadn't had a relationship with me. And I was the same way and still am the same way with my dad. I don't hate him anymore. I outgrew all that and got better and tried to give him another chance, but he don't want to be a better person. So we don't have a relationship still, but I didn't want that with my son. And I had gotten that for different reasons. I got the same result. So 2 years of me growing like this, my mother, telling my son, your dad's changing, he's getting better. And he finally called me one day, and that boy talked to me for 2 hours because I got it right. I just listened. And then I was able to rebuild the relationship. And he hadn't went to college, but he's been earning 6 figures since he started working when he was 19. I was able to influence him to start reading these books, which actually helped us to grow our relationship much better. But he's well into the 6 figures now, and he's had 3 completely different careers. So the reason I wanted to throw that in there real quick is, and I tell leaders in companies, don't do this stuff to make more money, to make more profits, get better results. You're going to do all of that. But if you want to make this stuff stick in your company, you got to be the kind of leader. And these are my favorite and best clients. They stand right beside me and say the same thing and nod their head when I'm saying it. We want to do this because we want to help you have a better life at home and at work. We don't care where. And if you actually have people get results like I just described with my son, you help your team members get them those kind of results, you're going to have some loyal folks. It's hard to run those people off when you start helping them make those kind of changes.
No, you're absolutely right, and I appreciate you sharing that. You talked to me a little bit about that last week when you and I first talked, and I thought that was a good part of the story, because leadership isn't just a thing for the workplace. This is a life thing, just like you said, and it impacts people everywhere. And so probably most importantly at home, because if we can get it right at home, we probably have a really good chance of influencing our children to be effective leaders and just good people when they grow up. But it's coaches, it's people at work, it's managers, it's parents, and all these things, teachers. These are life skills that that help in any space. So
absolutely,
again, thanks for bringing that up.
If people want to know what's wrong with our world when they turn on the TV and they see all this craziness, it's because this stuff is missing. It's missing at home. It's missing at church. It's missing at work. It's missing at school. There's a few places that do it, but most places don't teach character development. That's what's missing. We ain't got a law problem. We got a character problem.
Absolutely. And this is the whole thing that led me to even doing a podcast and having a company that's going to start doing similar work that you guys are doing, because I saw a lack of this. Just when I was in private business trying to find companies to come in and help, and it's a pretty big problem. So there's a lot of people out there that can benefit. So again, I thank you so much for coming on. You've been very generous, and I hope that we'll be able to get you back on the show in the future.
Yeah, man. And Lonnie, I wish you the best of success, because there ain't enough of us doing what I'm doing. There's plenty of us, but they ain't near enough. So I want you to be successful. That's why I'm on your show. I'm, you know, looking forward to sharing this podcast with my network. People in our industry, if they really get this, there is no competition. We need all the help we can get, because somebody may love you and hate me. Somebody may love me and hate you, or somewhere in between. We can all help somebody.
That's a good point to finish up with. There's no shortage of work out there to help with people. So I think it's a good space to be in, because again, you're genuinely trying to help people. It's an honest thing, and it's a good thing. And there's plenty of people out there that need it.
Yeah. Nobody ever calls and says, "Hey, Mac, can you come in? We got too many leaders. We need you to help us call some of them out. We got too many high impact, high character people." Nobody ever calls and says that.
Unfortunately, that's not the case, but
it's been a pleasure, man. Well,
no, thank you. And again, good luck to you guys. I hope business goes well, and you guys be safe down there in Atlanta.
Yeah, man. Semper Fi.
Semper Fi, buddy. Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that interview today with Mac Story of Blue Collar Leadership. You can check them out on their podcast, bluecollarleaders.com. Again, look at some of their books and things they have out there. Very nice people, and they're doing a great job in the world of leadership and trying to encourage others. Again, if you like the show, please hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with some friends. Be sure to check out our website, patriotleadershipadvisors.com, where you can follow us on Facebook and on LinkedIn. Hopefully you'll join us for the next episode. Talk to you soon.